priests are 7 ministers, and this is quite few. I think in Czech Republic you have like, I don't know, 15, 16. In Italy you have more than 20. We, in Switzerland, we have 7 members. So you can imagine that each member of our government has a large portfolio, not just one topic as transport or energy, but they merge together different topics in order to cover all these issues. They are elected by parliament every 4 years, and actually this year we have national elections of the parliament, and then also of the government at the same time. So 7 members. How is the composition of these 7 members? There is a magic formula, is the name of it, which started in 1959, and that means that the 3 major parties in the parliament have 2 representatives, and the 4th largest party has 1. So 2-2-2-1. Until 2003, from 59 until 2003, the composition was made by 2 radical liberal, 2 social democrats, 2 Christian democrat, and 1 of the People's Party, so the Populist Party. This has changed in 2003 because the right wing, the right populist party, won a lot of votes. And so this has changed. Since 2003, we have 2 liberal radical, 2 as of socialist, 2 from the People's Party, and 1 social democratic. And of course, we will see how this will change or not change in the coming elections this end of this year. There are 2 main particularities of our executive of the government. The first is the collegiality. So the 7 members have equal rights. We call this primus inter, have equal rights, have all the same rights. So if you want, we have 1/7 prime minister. Each of members is 1/7 of prime minister. Okay. Of course, we have a president. This is important mainly for external relation. When we have a state visit, for example, I don't know, Peter Pavel would go to Switzerland, you need a president who shakes hand. So we have a president, of course. This president rotates every year. So every year we have a new president. Mm-hmm. Of course, he has other duties. So, for example, he chairs the weekly meeting of the government. But it's primus inter pares. So they all have the same duties and rights inside the government. The second one is the principle of consensus. And I think this is, of course, one of the most important we have. Each member of the government, of course, belongs to a political party. And of course, they have clear priorities or clear vision of the priorities of politics. But they always seek a consensus inside the Federal Council. And they take the decision together. They always try to find a consensus. And if that is not possible, they vote. So often it comes to often, not often, they try to agree, but if they don't agree, they vote. And so, with simple majority, so 4-3. But what is then exceptional is then when the decision is taken, they have to defend the decision. And it makes it sometimes quite strange that you have maybe one of the federal councillor, he's defending a position maybe of the left side, but he's from the populist party. But this is part of our system, and I must say it works quite well. So you listen to his words, you know he's not sharing at all this view, but this is his role in the government. At the moment that he goes out of the government, he can again defend, of course, the position of his party. Maybe a last element is the stability. So members of Federal Council can be re-elected as many times as they want. Normally they end their mandate when they retire, or they choose also not to stand for a next election. These are the options, but they stay usually for quite a long time in the government. So
So they are also more times the president?
Yes, yes, yes. They rotate the president, they have it many times, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excuse me. The president is apart from these seven ministers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's one of them.
Yes, and it doesn't change anything on his portfolio. So if the Minister of Foreign Affairs is president, he continues as Minister of Foreign Affairs. He has just also the head of a president.
My question was whether he is one of these seven people.
Yes, 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 yes.
Okay.
They just have normally five people more in their staff. They organize the visit and the protocol because he is the president for this year. But otherwise, everything is the same.
So apart from the president, he holds as well some portfolio.
Yes, 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 absolutely.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Rotation. Or?
Yes.
And for how long is the government elected?
4 years.
4 years.
Mm-hmm. And then the president is the one who the anciennity principle, how do you say?
Mm-hmm.
The oldest is the president. So if a new member comes into the Federal Council, he will be the last having the presidency. Mm-hmm. So as I told, seven ministers elected by parliament. We have two chambers, the one of people, 200 members, and the one, the Council of States, which have 46 members representing the different cantons. Okay. And each chamber has the same power. We don't have this in all countries in the world. Some chambers have more power than others, but in Switzerland, the National Council and the Council of State have exactly the same power. So the law has to go back from one chamber to the other to be adopted. What is
and
also
both has to agree.
They
both
have to agree.
To agree.
If the second time the chamber, one of the chamber doesn't agree, the law is not adopted. And we have a militia parliament. We say it militia parliament because many of the parliamentarians they have also a job. So they, of course, they spend a lot of time in parliament and working on that. But I think 1/3 of their working time they have also another job.
And both chambers are elected at the same time, or?
Yeah, no, this could change. This is something I will explain now because it's about federalism and competencies of cantons. But I mean, for federal election, yes, so they do it at the same time. So, yes. But okay, so maybe you come to the second point, which is federalism. And I would like to start by saying, before being Swiss, I would say that we are from a canton. So the cantonal identity in Switzerland is very, very strong. Also, when I present myself, and sorry, I don't know if you did it, but I say I'm from the Italian part of Switzerland. I'm from the Canton Ticino, because this is really a strong. There is a strong link with our cantons, and not only cantons, even inside of a canton. There are many differences, and we underline this. For example, in my case, I'm from Sotto Cenere. Sotto Cenere is the southern part of Ticino. And I can tell you there's a big difference because between Sotto Cenere and Sopra Cenere. And there is even more big difference with the city of Lugano, the financial capital. We don't care. But this is unique also in Switzerland. I think also my colleague from Switzerland can confirm that. So we are very much identified in our canton. And why it is like this? I think first of all we have to remind that our country was not split into cantons. The different cantons joined to form what is Switzerland today. So first of all there were three cantons, and then it went bigger and bigger and as forming what is Switzerland today. And for maybe the other reason is also the languages, the multi-language country. So we have 63% German speaking, 23% French speaking, 8% my minority Italian speaking, and then 0.5% Romansh. But here also, I mean, there are different dialects, and these are quite different between them. So if you go out to Wallis and you hear the Schweizerdeutsch of Wallis, I can tell you, I don't understand it. Okay, I have two mother tongues. I have Italian and Schweizerdeutsch. But if I hear a Walliser, I have some difficulties to understand him. And this makes it also maybe this strong link to our cantons, and not only cantons, but also municipalities where we live. So we have 26 cantons. Each canton has its own government, parliament, court, constitution, and we have 2,136 communes, municipalities. This is important because cantons and municipalities have a lot of autonomy. This is the principles of subsidiarity which we have in Switzerland. What is not mentioned in the constitution is competence of the canton. And so competence at national level, there is foreign affairs, defense, so of course national fiscal policy, but everything what is not mentioned is in the competence of cantons. That means healthcare system, education system, also police is managed at cantonal level. Fiscal policy, all what is on municipality, but also on cantonal level. So the autonomy of the canton is very big. It's very big, and we will see this also in my third point, which is about direct democracy. How important are cantons in our country? Maybe another point I want to underline concerning federalism is what we call. I also learned it in English because I didn't know it, the instrument of national fiscal equalization system. So this is a very important instrument to ensure the cohesion of Switzerland and the cantonal cohesion and reduce the disparities between cantons. So we don't have only disparities within Europe, we have disparities within Switzerland. So there are rich cantons and there are poorer cantons. And there is a mechanism which makes that the richer cantons and the national government, the federal government, they distribute money in excess to the poorer cantons. So we have some cantons which are the net contributors. This is Zug, Schwyz, Nidwalden, Geneva, Basel, Zurich, and Obwalden. They are the richest also because of their tax and fiscal system, and they contribute to the poorest, I would say, like for example the Jura, but also my canton receives some money. This is an instrument which works very well, never put into the discussion, even if it's always a little bit the same canton contributing to that. But this is part of our system, and it helps, of course, to keep this cohesion. Okay, I would come to the third point, direct democracy. It's not a Swiss invention. Maybe you would think, it comes from Switzerland. No, it's not. It's French. It's French. So maybe I start by a little bit, of course, also the antique Greek, they had some democratic instrument in Athens in 600 before Christ. But of course, women and slaves were excluded, but it was the first form of democratic participation, of course. But then it mainly came with the American and French Revolution and the first French Constitution, which was in 1793, introduced this political system with direct democracy tools. And you know that Napoleon came also to us. He tried to unify Switzerland, and he introduced this first instrument of referendum from the French Constitution. Napoleon failed, as we all know. He was obliged to reinstall the cantonal autonomy, but the cantons took over this element of referendum, which actually came from the French Constitution. And so everything started, and in 1848, as I told at the beginning, after the Sonderbundskrieg between the religion, the Protestant and the Catholic, a popular referendum for a new federal constitution was held, and people voted in favor of this new constitution. So the modern Switzerland was formally invented by a referendum in 1848. First of all, only constitutional amendments, so changes of the constitution, were submitted to scrutiny. But then later, so in 1874 and in 1891, they decided to introduce also the scrutiny for laws, referendum for laws of the parliament, and what is named the citizen initiatives, the popular initiatives. I come to this instrument now. Swiss voters are called to scrutiny 4 times a year on a national level. And there are 3 main instruments of direct democracy in Switzerland. This is the mandatory referendum on constitutional changes, the first one. The second one is the optional referendum. And the third one is the popular initiative. And I will briefly explain what are the different aspects of these instruments. So the mandatory referendum is every change of the constitution has to be adopted not only by the people, but also by the cantons. So majority of people and majority of cantons. Otherwise, the constitution cannot be amended. There are also other situations where we need double majority, so people and canton, if Switzerland joins supranational organization. Also in that case, we need double majority. So then we have the second one. This is the optional referendum. When people disagree on a new law, so on a decision of a parliament, they have 100 days to collect 50,000 signatures and to submit this to the vote. In that case, only majority of people is necessary to block a law or to adopt it in that case. I have to say that the parliament, this is also a mechanism which has improved through the history, the parliament tries absolutely to avoid to go to a vote. And so this makes our system so special. We try really to include all possible stakeholders which are affected by a new law before adopting it, trying to consult them, and to all this procedure takes sometimes many years, but so the parliament can be quite sure that the referendum will not be taken in that case, so they don't will submit the law to a popular vote. We always say in Switzerland decision process takes a long time. This is true, but on the other hand, that after all this process, we have an ownership on what we have discussed and decided. And so it doesn't happen so often that a law that has been approved, it's going to be removed, because all the process to come to a law was that long and that discussed, and all stakeholders were able to take position on that, that all the majority of people then agrees on that, of what has been decided. And it's often interesting also to see what happens in other countries. We saw it, for example, I make an example of Brexit. If you remember, I mean, Cameron at that time just told, I promised we'll do a referendum on Brexit, and they didn't have even 1 month's time to discuss on this such important topic for a country like UK. What would be the consequence of a Brexit? And of course, I mean, not all people can understand all the consequences of that. And so there has not been really a discussion between the population on what could be the consequences, and we see it now. We see it now, and maybe people realize now that maybe this was not the wisest decision they have taken in their history. But so I can make the link to what is also our relation, Switzerland's relation to the EU. Yes, it takes a long time. Takes a long time, and there are all new developments, and we had an institutional agreement that is not there anymore, but we are now again in discussion with the EU to find a solution how we want to construct our bilateral relation with the EU It's true, it takes time, but I'm also sure that when we will have a decision, then we will have also the ownership for that, and we will be quite satisfied with it, because everybody could say what was important for him. So last but not least, the popular initiative. So it's a way for citizens to request an amendment of the constitution. So initiative is only possible to change by changing the constitution. Okay. The committee or the people who want to launch an initiative have to collect 100,000 signatures in 18 months. There are of course conditions. These are the unity of form. So you have to, your proposal of an article of constitution have to respect the formality of an article of the constitution, of course. Then the unity of matter. So you cannot have an article who speaks about social healthcare and migration at the same time. So it must be about one topic, and it must not violate mandatory rules of international law. So these are three important conditions to submit a popular initiative. I can give you some numbers. Since the introduction in 1891, there has been 516 registered initiatives, 352 had a minimum of 100 signatures, 228 went through a popular vote, and only 25 has been adopted by majority of people and cantons, 25. You could say this is a very few number for all this procedure, but there are some very important decisions which has been taken through a popular initiative. Joining the United Nations, 2002, was a popular initiative. We are now in the UN Security Council this year and next year. Actually, this month we have the presidency of the UN Security Council for the first time, of course. So, I mean, this was a popular initiative. We had some difficult initiatives which have been approved. This is the Swiss Immigration Initiative against mass immigration. This was in 2014. This was, why I say difficult, because it entered into collision with the free movement of person we have with the EU. So it's like a little bit to be an acrobat there to find then a solution, because as I told, all these initiatives are going to put into the constitution. And I will come back on this, because it's quite, there are some bizarre articles we could have in the constitution if they would have been adopted. We had an initiative against the construction of minaret, 2007, approved. So in the constitution, Article 72.3, it's written, the construction of minarets are forbidden. This is an initiative which was approved.
And you have no minarets?
No, no. We had before, we have still, but we cannot build new ones.
Okay, yeah. The old ones are not destroyed.
No, they're not destroyed. there are initiatives which were rejected twice. The people and the canton said no for direct election of the government. So as I told you, the seven are elected by the parliament. But there were two initiatives proposing that the government, the seven members of the government, would be elected by the people. They said no twice. There were also some interesting, the Horde initiative. The promoters demanded subsidies for farmers who keep cows and goats with horns. Yes.
I remember this.
You remember that?
Yeah. And we discussed it also with the farmers last year.
It hasn't passed. So, no. Overall, this is also a number I just saw somewhere. There were from 1900 until 2020, 630 votes on national level in Switzerland. This is more than half of all votes worldwide. More than half of all votes, popular votes worldwide, what we have in Switzerland. It's quite amazing. Then we have the direct democracy in the more pure constellation, and this is this Landesgemeinde. I'm sure you know it. In two towns, actually, my town of origin, I'm from Appenzell, so my father comes from Appenzell Innerrhoden. In my passport, still it's written Appenzell. So Appenzell and Glarus are the two cities or villages where take place the Landesgemeinde twice a year. So the people meet themselves in the main square of the town and vote on but many very important issues. Actually, there is also a very interesting anecdote. Just last week, the president of Botswana went to Switzerland and he visited the Landesgemeinde of Appenzell. And they were voting about rising taxes. They voted in favor. And the president of Botswana was like, what? They said yes to rising tax. It was like, this is not possible. How can the people agree on that? But it's also something very important of our system, because we know we need money. So if we want to build that street or that school, then we need money, we have to raise tax. So of course we will approve that. But we have also an initiative on a national level to have a minimal salary of 4,000 Swiss francs a month. This was an initiative, and they said no. And I remember the articles in the Italian newspaper, because I was in Roma at that time, saying, crazy guys. I mean, they say no to a minimum salary of 4,000 francs? Wow. How is that possible?
And the similar was the one week holidays more, you say also no.
Oh, no, yeah. But yeah. This I really don't understand. Okay.
It was mentioned by Financial Times.
See?
But there are some limits also for Lorenzo.
Yes, and another difficult point for me to mention is the women's political right. You know it, mm-hmm. We were the last one, 1971 at national level, and my canton, Appenzell, in 1991. So imagine, in 1990, men voted against participation of women in politics. In 1990, and the federal court had to intervene and say this is not constitutional, you have also to include women in politics and make them vote. But we were Switzerland also at national level, so 1971, the last country. If you imagine Finland, that was the first country in Europe, was 1906, so 70 years before. And the reason behind, it's a bit difficult to explain. Of course, it's not the parliament deciding this. This is, again, an amendment of the constitution, takes time, but it cannot be only explained by this. Another interesting explanation of that is that, we were not part in World War II and World War I and II. And World War I was an important driver for women's rights in Europe. Because men went to the war and women had to deal also with political issues, and this was not the case in Switzerland, so we were not part of these two world wars, and this could also be an explanation, but I don't know. I think it's too late in any case. And also another point is foreigners, they don't have the right to vote on a national level in Switzerland. And this is quite a big part. Maybe you know, we have 2 million foreigners in Switzerland, so 25%. And these people cannot vote on a national level. They have some rights on cantonal level. For example, Jura and Neuchâtel, they include also foreigners for their cantonal votes. But I mean, this is still some issue, a challenge we have in Switzerland. We have also the Röstigraben. Röstigraben, yes, it's a little bit a stereotype, but it's true. I mean, you cannot say, maybe you know what is Röstigraben?
No. I think you need to read.
Okay. The Röstigraben is, also, it marks Swiss politics since ever, And it's the difference in voting behavior between the French part and the German part. I don't include the Italian part, because the Italian part sometimes go with the French and sometimes with the German, so it cannot really. But it's true that they often vote in a different way. Of course, not all French cantons against or German cantons. But of course, it makes sometimes the difference in the end result of a vote. And maybe I can mention the vote of 1992 on the European Economic Area, EVER. So, I mean, why we are not in the EU? Because in 92 we voted against being part of the EU. And there, I think all the French cantons were in favor, even with 8%. And the canton of Innenschweiz, so the most, I would say, conservative of the German part, they voted against with 30%. So this was quite a huge difference in voting. And but well, you cannot generalize, of course, this in each vote. But sometimes, yes, must admit, they have other perception, other priorities, on also in foreign policy, as it was the case in 92. Direct democracy has also other challenges, and I will then finish with that. First of all, it's the quantity. When the first instrument were introduced, Swiss citizens had to vote on an average of 2.5 topics a year, and nowadays it's about 9 topics a year. So they go more often to scrutiny. There are many topics they have to, study and know about, and this with the quantity is linked also the complexity. I read somewhere, I remember also, there was before the votes, we always receive a leaflet which is very well done,
yeah,
with the old explanation of what, and also the position of the different party, the position of the government, the position of the parliament, and of course the position of the committee which proposes an initiative. So it's very well equilibrated, I think, this leaflet. And there was in June 2021, this leaflet had 140 pages, which every citizen who goes to vote should read, of course, to understand what's about. And there were only already 50 pages only for the revision of the CO2 law. So you can imagine, if you really want to understand everything and to vote in the right manner, you really have to take your time and to inform you, to listen to the debates, and this makes it sometimes a little bit challenging. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you can also ask yourself, as it was now in Brexit, how wide has to be direct democracy? When should it be better to give this decision in the hand of our representative, which are sitting in the parliament, and they know these topics, they are the experts on certain topics to decide for us, for the country? Or to this question is also linked a new phenomenon, this is internet and the social media. How can politicians manipulate the ideas or the position of normal citizens as we are, with maybe some very easy populist sentences, and it's quite dangerous, I think, that we are not listening anymore to experts as it was in the past. We just follow a little bit, I know, the social media and read a sentence of a politician and take this for granted or for the truth, while there are many other aspects behind every new law, every decision which has to be taken. So This is a large debate. Of course, we as Swiss, we are very proud about our instrument of direct democracy, but we also are aware of the limits on the challenges this direct democracy brings. And of course, it's the role of the government, of the parliament, to explain and to say where are the threats and the opportunities of that. So I think I I finished my presentation. So, if you have some questions.
Maybe one question.
Can you tell me, Parliament is sitting permanently or does it sit...
Four sessions a year.
Four sessions a year.
Uh-huh. And there
how
are
many sessions?
How long? 3 weeks.
2 weeks.
Three.
And
there are also Sondersessionen, so special sessions.
And how the members are paid in Parliament? Sitting in Parliament, what is my salary?
Oh, I asked my colleagues from Switzerland to help them. It's not high, this I know, it's not a high salary, but I cannot...
So it is about 120,000, all citizens.
120,000 Swiss francs.
The price is about 80,000 and
okay.
Some... So for the whole year?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there are 12 weeks in Parliament and the rest is home office or they...
Yeah, or they have another job.
They have own job.
Yeah.
They are not.
So it means it is not their main job to sit in Parliament.
Well, okay, this has changed in the last decades. Of course, they are mainly working for in politics and for preparing also these sessions. But a big part of parliamentarians, they have other activities and other jobs, yes. Yeah.
And what happens if the government or this council of ministers decides something and some canton or some of the cantons do not approve or agree with this decision? Is there any mechanism how to challenge it, how to oppose it, how to change it?
I mean, I think that the separation of competences is quite clear. So if it's competence at national level, of course it's the national parliament and the national government deciding.
For example, in case of construction of highway or some roads which are going through Switzerland, through several cantons, then I suppose that cantons should agree with it. So.
I think this is
the situation.
I think this is also, I mean, the highways is national level, but then there are the other streets are at the lower level, so cantonal level, so it's about the canton to decide if they want a street or not. And this, I mean, this is maybe the most important part of direct democracy and where you really see the influence of citizen in the important decisions which are taken. You know, there are mainly in what you're saying, in the streets and constructions, you can ask for a vote, and often the citizens say, no, I don't want this new building, I don't want this new street, I prefer to have a square, and this is what at the end is going to be done.
So it means that people can change the decision of government?
Yeah. With the instrument of direct democracy, yes. At all level, at municipal level, cantonal level, and national level.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
You mentioned there were 2 million of foreigners.
You mentioned, 2 million, yes.
Yes. Is there a possibility to apply for Swiss citizenship?
Of course.
And how long does it take if successful?
Okay, if you're not married to a Swiss, I think you have to be 10 years in Switzerland and then you can apply for Swiss citizenship after 10 years. If you're married, you have to be married 5 years to a Swiss and live 3 years in Switzerland and you can apply. Please correct me, the expert on that. But I think this is the condition.
It's okay.
It's okay.
Isn't it depending on cantons and...
No, this is national. To get the Swiss passport, this is it's on national level. Yes.
But the decision is in municipality.
Ah, okay, yes, the decision is taken in municipality.
And they
they have to go through an exam to get the passport. So you have to know, I don't know, which language is, how the political system of Switzerland works,
and so on. it's not only but also the neighbors or the people from the village or municipality can say something,
can oppose it.
But I think there is some small difference. Because if you move from one canton to another mm-hmm. canton, that canton says you live or another place. When I came to Zurich, they mm-hmm. told me you have to live in Canton Zurich at least 6 years mm-hmm. until you get Swiss citizenship.
Six.
Oh.
Because that is, you live in Switzerland 10 years,
10 years,
but okay. in on two different
yeah,
places.
Yeah.
Aha, because you lived in two yeah. different places. Okay. Ah, would be yeah. Mm.
Sorry,
I know. If we have that high rate of foreigners, 25%, that the procedure is quite difficult. In fact, I
mean, sure.
This is for sure.
But there are much more foreigners than 2 million because they are all foreigners. They already get Swiss citizenship. So I think there are about more than 40% of total foreigners in Switzerland.
I have the number of 25%. This was always
which
the number
were,
we...
Which were not, how can I say?
The mainly, I think 70% are EU citizens.
But if you've got a passport, you are not... foreigner anymore.
If you have the Swiss passport?
If you have a Swiss passport,
you
are not foreigner
anymore.
Anymore.
Yes.
So, I guess.
What? I didn't understand.
Yeah, yeah. If you have the Swiss passport, you are not part of the Swiss passport.
Schmatter, Schmitterskei, Pass, Kuchnerskei, Zizemann.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Malou perličku.
Ano.
Možná nevíte, asi rozumíte všechny česky. Díky českému území vzniklo Švýcarsko.
Díky českému zemi. Přemysl tak a druhý, jo?
Ano, byl jsem na prezentaci té knížky.
It is the start of the history that because of us, if our Přemysl tak a zweite kann Schweiz. Das war Anfang der Schweiz.
Jenom ta story? Vím, že Přemysl takhle prohrál, Habsburkové se soustředili na střed Evropy a zapomněli na zadní vratka. To Švýcaři využili.
Tak to je jiný téma.
We will make a, maybe a second presentation.
Oni se chtěli vrátit, ale Švýcaři
vyměnili. Využili to, co pán zmínil, že Švýcarsko vzniklo díky tomu, že Přemysl Otakar II. Nebyl těmi kurfiřty tehdy zvolen a zvolili si raději slabého a tehdy neznámého Habsburka, mimochodem teda hrad Habsburky ve Švýcarsku, tak o tom se můžete dočíst tady v té knize, já bych ji prezentovala, byla bývala, tak jako tak nakonec. To napsal pan Denis Limoulin a teď byla převožena do češtiny, můžete si ji...
Jo,
on je Švýcar z Friburku, já to teda čtu a musím říct, že pro mě je to jako detektivka, protože k tomu Švýcarsku mám vztah, ale těch bodů jako z historie je tam spousta, takže kdybyste měli zájem, je i na našem e-shopu, tady si ji můžete prolistovat a stojí to opravdu za to. Vyšlo to díky tady velké podpoře švýcarského velvyslanectví. A tam se dostřete i to, že teda možná by Švýcarsko nebylo, kdyby Přemysl Otakar II. Byl zvolen.
Ne, kdyby vyhrál, byť ho na Moravském poli.
No, tak, tak nebo, no.
Kdyby byl zvolen.
Tak.
Mezi Českým lvem a Helvétským křížem. A ještě teda, tak ještě se zmíním jednou o tom, protože tenhle ten týden o víkendu probíhá veletrh Svět knihy, což jste možná zaznamenali, a tam je teda i sekce německé literatury Das Buch, kde budou prezentovány dva švýcarští autoři, a ve 16:00 na francouzském stánku, protože tenhle ten pán píše francouzsky, je z Friburku a nejdřív to vyšlo francouzsky, tak bude autogramiáda téhle té knížky. Tak jo.
Ano.
Irina Bržina tam bude prezentovat svou zkušenost ze života ve Švýcarsku.
Ano. Což se zase týká těch emigrantů a tak dále.
To je zase téma.
Ano, tak to může být.
Co by se stalo s demokrací u nás a Češi byli ve Švýcarsku?
Tak já myslím, že jsme vyčerpali otázky na paní Lorencu a předáme slovo Ivanovi, který už s vámi bude mluvit česky. Okay. Nou, dat moest toen ik daar.
Ik verstehe wel.
Zal ik die dat niet bezetten?
Nee.